But if you have a product that's contained within that packaging system that does not have a forever life, then you would have to revert to putting an expiration date on the package, because if, you know, you go to open up a package and you need this balloon type device that's in the tray, that balloon might have died a year ago if you don't have an expiration date on it, when in fact it has a defined lifespan.
Rising above the buzz of ultrasonic cleaners and the clanking of stainless steel are the ideas and voices that are changing an industry. You're listening to the Beyond Clean podcast, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are improving our sterile processing world. Each week, we speak with the frontline technicians, CEOs, engineers, and entrepreneurs with a common goal to help you fight dirty. Every instrument, every time. Whether you are tuning in for education or inspiration, we're wicked glad you did. Now, turn on those washes and turn up the volume. It's time to go Beyond Clean.
On this Vendor Spotlight, we speak with Donna McLaughlin, CRCST, CSPDT, CFER, and Barbara Ann Harmer, the Vice President of Clinical Services at Innovative Sterilization Technologies, LLC. And today, we are going to talk about event-related and time-related practices around sterilization. And, you know, sometimes in the industry, we see a mix and match of the two, even though a facility may have a consistent policy. Sometimes facilities aren't even totally sure. And while sterile processing may know, is the operating room also on board? And is everybody aware of the difference between the two? And also just defining what is an event, because a lot of times people think an event is obvious package damage or container damage, peel pack damage, but there are other events that could occur. And I'm not sure it's always really well defined in the industry. And so that's where we're going today with this conversation with Donna McLaughlin and Barbara Ann Harmer. I'm excited to get into it. Barbara Ann's been on several times in the past, but this will be Donna's first appearance on the show. So let's get right into it. We're going to be back after a short break with Donna McLaughlin and Barbara Ann Harmer.
From 17 Studios, you're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Donna McLaughlin and Barbara Ann Harmer, and we're going to be talking about event-related versus expiratory dating, or often referred to as time-related expiration. And I'm really excited to get into this topic because it's been a hot one lately. And before we get started, Barbara, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience? Although you shouldn't be new because you've been on the podcast episodes as well as, you know, other vendor spotlights that we've had here on Beyond Clean. So welcome back.
Thanks, Justin. I think most importantly, I've been involved in the surgical care of patients for over 44 years as a registered nurse. I joined One Tray just shy of 6 years ago. My anniversary will be next month, as the Vice President of Clinical Services. And I've been, in my past, a surveyor for HHC and conducting deemed status surveys for Medicare for just shy of 25 years. And I am very happy to be a participant on several AMI working groups, one being ST79, another one be working group for the endoscopy area, and most recently working on CIR 109. So that's just a really quick bio of who I am. Thank you.
Excellent. And Donna, this is your first appearance on the Beyond Clean podcast, so I want to welcome you. And if you could also just tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, thank you, first of all. I am very proud to be here. I'm a former manager of sterile processing for the Covenant Health System in Knoxville, Tennessee, particularly at Fort Sanders Regional Medical Center. I've 39 to 40 years experience in sterile processing. I've had the opportunity to be on several different committees, president and past presidents of our associations for ISHM, and very much a proponent of AAMI and AORN and so on and so forth. And I've had the opportunity again to author and co-author several articles involving sterile processing.
Excellent. Well, you said you're honored to be here, but I'm honored to have you both. And again, a topic that I think is really important, and it's kind of one of those topics that I thought everybody had really anchored on and we all had a good handle on it. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're back to this conversation, and Barbara Ann, you've talked about your experience as a surveyor, and what we're seeing in the industry is that there are new questions popping up, especially around expiry dating from surveyors that are coming into facilities today. And so it's really reinvigorated this conversation, but also both of your personal experiences in the past. And we're going to tie all that together in our conversation today. But just for the sake of making sure we're all on the same page for the discussion, Barbara Ann, I'd like you to just start with defining what event-related sterilization means.
So event-related sterility in the current version of ST-79-2017 says that event-related sterility maintenance is sterility maintenance that is not based on expiration dating, not time-related, but rather on factors such as the quality of the packaging material, the storage conditions, the methods and conditions of transport, and the amount and conditions of handling. While that's AAMI's, AORN took slightly a different stance in the current guidelines that they have under sterilization. And the way that AORN addresses it is that an organization should establish a process for determining the shelf life of sterilized items, but the shelf life should be event related unless otherwise specified by the packaging system manufacturer's labeled expiration date. So while they are symbiotic, while they are very close, there is slightly a difference between the two organizations.
So, you know, I'd like to put this in a context of something that you have a great deal of experience with, you know, and that's obviously the one tray system. So can you kind of put that into context in regards to your experience with one tray and how this has sort of come up in your day-to-day conversations?
So Justin, it's been very interesting over the last few years when organizations call me for help for clinical situations. One of the things and one of the questions that I ask them, which is very apropos, is, are you event related or are you using expiratory dating sterilization practices? And I get crickets. I don't get an answer. And then finally, I have to kind of tease the information out by asking, when you label an in-house product, what is on that package? Do you have a sterilization date? Do you have a sterilization date and an expiration date? What does your policy say? And so by teasing the information out of the person that I'm conversing with, there finally gets to be some light at the end of the tunnel and the bulbs start going off, and then somebody can then begin to answer me. The most interesting fact, though, is that within the last, I'm going to say 6 to 9 months, there's been a lot more confusion when a user would call for help, because they'll tell me that they have different levels of what they believe to be event related. So they start to compartmentalize, well, we put peel packs on a shelf, we're event related, but only for 6 months. And then we'll use a rigid container, we'll put that on the shelf for 365 days. Or we put it on the shelf forever. And so they're confused within their own definition, because the purest of definitions of event related is that the user or the organization saying that that's the practices that they have would believe that once an item has been sterilized, it's considered sterile until an event occurs that renders it unsterile or compromised.
So that's really interesting, because you described that situation with the peel packs where they're waffling between the two. It's not even just a mix of the two. Like, for certain things, we do this, and for certain things, we do this. In that peel pack instance, they're saying we do both. Can you talk about why, maybe an example of facilities they're using time related for one type, and then they're using maybe, you know, event related for another type, and what that looks like? Because I kind of heard you really describe a combination of the two, but what would have a facility doing one for one type of packaging and another for a different type of packaging?
I think the easiest explanation that I can give is that since event related and if there's nothing that's happening to that particular product, can go, I like to say, to infinity and beyond, ultimately. But if you have a product that's contained within that packaging system that does not have a forever life, then you would have to revert to putting an expiration date on the package, because if, you know, you go to open up a package and you need this balloon type device that's in the tray, that balloon might have died a year ago if you don't have an expiration date on it, when in fact it has a defined lifespan. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I'm glad we had you elaborate on that. So I've always kind of seen it like you've got to choose one or the other. You know, that's the way it's always seemed like, you know, like you would say to a customer, do you do event related or do you do time related? And then, you know, what's really coming out of this conversation is that there's a lot of gray area in that. That's probably what sparked this conversation back to the surface and becoming such a hot topic. So why would a facility or an organization at a system level choose event related over expiratory dating, especially, you know, in the context of what you just said?
I think the easiest answer is cost. From a financial perspective, back in the 70s, I can tell you many a weekend I had the illustrious task of going into a closet and reorienting that entire closet because we had a defined expiration date. And I was the kid in the backseat of the car that would always ask, but why? Why don't we believe that this is sterile? It looks fine. There's no issues with it. And it was quite frankly years later that AORN and Amy then developed the principle of event related. And it just makes a lot of sense. But in that, there does need to be some concentrated effort on making sure that whatever sterile barrier system or packaging system you chose, it is still in a pristine position of being sterile.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You talk about that time-related or expiratory dating and going into the room and looking at all that. It makes me think about all the materials managers when they have to do inventory every year and everything shuts down and they start taking stock of where things are at and when they're going to expire. There's also a component there of just full-time employees, right? And the cost of time to be able to manage that situation. So, Donna, you've waited long enough. It's your first appearance on the show, so I want to bring you into this, you know, conversation, and really from somebody who worked on the front lines. And really, I want this to be a concrete conversation. I want to have some examples here that people can say, oh yeah, that's what I do every day in my department, or I can relate to that. And I think if we give specific examples, it'll really, really help us. So let's start with just what is an event, because I think Barbara Ann teed this up really well in talking about, okay, we have different levels of an event when we really dive in and take a consultative approach to discussing this conversation, you know, with customers and, you know, end users out in the field. So, you know, from your perspective, what are some examples of an event? Because I'm not sure everybody sees that through the same lens.
Well, I mean, so some of your basic things that I think you're really taught during orientation are like your basic, like your tears and your holes, things that are obvious, you know, wetness inside of a package or how is it stored. So some of those are the very basic things that people look for, not only in your sterile processing, but the end user themselves. They're taught to look at that. But there's all that gray area in between that we do not look at. You know, how many times when a doctor's chewing on a CST to go look for something immediately and they're rifling through a bunch of pill packs that they have stored upstairs in a particular bin And even though they may have been put in there originally as first in and first out, have they changed their gloves? Have they washed their hands? No, they're going out, they're rifling through things, and they're contaminating things. That's an event. Nobody realizes that. Somebody is holding a bunch of items in their arms trying to go into an OR room, or just transporting them from a cart, maybe, to a cooling area, or they have a pill pack that's laying on top of this. They don't want that pill pack to fall, so they're going to put it in their pocket. Well, that pocket, how many times, how dirty is that pocket? You know, how long have they used that one particular jacket that may have been hanging there for so long? I've been in situations where we have found instrument trays that have been stored in places that you would not believe, in ceiling tiles, okay? Just because now, that's an event, you know what I mean? That is an event. And that was really unusual on that one, you know. So there's all these sorts of things that people don't recognize, that the touch points, how many times you're touching things. They just think that as long as it looks all right, you know, it doesn't have a hole in it, yeah, it's a little crushed, so maybe you don't see the hole. So there's, like I've said, there's lots of incidents where things like that happen.
It's funny. I've never heard of a tray in the ceiling tiles. I've definitely heard of peel packs and, you know, surgeon preference items, but never a tray. That's like taking it to a whole new level, literally in the room. But you're right, because it's not, the environment is not controlled above those ceiling tiles the same way that it is in sterile storage below the ceiling tiles. I mean, that's so important. And I think you did a nice job of really telling us about, you know, here are some examples of event related that people wouldn't think of, because most of the time, and you really alluded to this, I think people think an event is it got dropped on the floor, the packaging is punctured, or it's significantly damaged. But event related is something that is concretely physical, not always something that happened behavioral. And what makes that a challenge is the behavioral piece is so hard for people to identify. It's almost like it has to be a culture or a practice or an understanding that this created an event. I don't think you're redefining it, but I think you're defining it in a better way.
Well, you know, people just do not look at just how it's transported. You know, I mean, and they may not even know that maybe it was transported in an open container or open going down the hallway. They receive the item and they think everything's fine. They have no questions of the integrity of the package. But that's an event in itself, you know. It was sent up to them, maybe not completely cooled. That's an event itself. So there's several ways and things that, so it comes down to an educational component as well as it is just looking at the package.
Yeah, I think I always think of that 5-second rule that people joke about with food. Like if you drop the food and you get it in 5 seconds, you're okay to eat it. You know, I think sometimes people think that applies with dropping something on the floor, either a container. Typically, it's going to be a peel pack, but it could be a small container too, or even a large one. And they don't necessarily, if there's no physical damage, qualify that as an event. But as you're describing, it's not just physical damage. It's something that actually happens in the moment. And people have to be mindful that that was an event. That just happened. That was an event. And now we need to put it back through the process from a quality assurance perspective. Have you heard that with like that kind of 5-second rule concept as relates to events?
Well, yeah. I mean, everybody will say, hey, you know, we call it the 2-second rule. Come on, somebody drops something down and you know that they know what's going on when their head goes to the right and their head goes to the left and then they pick the item back up again. You know what I mean? You know, because of the pressure they're under sometimes, you know what I mean? But that's where a stance has to be taken. That, look, we our responsibility is patients, patient care, patient safety. We don't want anything happening to our patient. And things that, you know, when something drops to the ground, then you're compressing bacteria that are on that ground into that package. So there's going to be problems or potentially problems there.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I've seen happen sometimes, and it's actually the facility I'm thinking of, they had two different roles. So it wasn't really sterile processing, but they had a role where It was kind of, you know, combined with materials and OR in a way, but they would go get the trays and kind of bring them to some of the procedures. And we literally see somebody walking down the hall holding it like a suitcase. So they're just holding onto one handle. To me, that's an event because all the instruments inside of the tray, because it wasn't held horizontally, could be damaged. That would be an event, correct?
Yes, it most certainly is an event. How you hold it, how far away from your body you're holding that, you know, is it covered? Is it, I mean, just because they're moving it from point A to point B, even in the same area, how you touch that package, how you touch that tray makes a big difference.
Yeah, we were talking a lot about peel packs, and I wanted to make sure that people understood that events happen to containers too. Like, they're not this hard shell that makes it impossible to have an event, right? And so, as we kind of asked Barbara Ann earlier about her experience with one tray, I kind of want to pose the same one to you, but now really specific to that event-related practice and everything that we were just talking about by giving concrete examples.
Well, I mean, I think in general, just not only with one tray as with other trays, you know, trays have filter systems to them, you know, and it is the responsibility whether somebody is using product A or product B or one tray or whatever, that they need to be looking at those filters to see if there are holes or any items that are in there. To that point, we have always used one trays for turnarounds, very fast turnarounds, because we've been pushed to that with not having enough trays that are around, add-ons where we were a hospital system or a particular hospital out of a system that had 25% add-ons. So one trays were fabulous for us to be able to use them. But again, the same principles apply, except with a one tray, they had to know that they could use this right out of a sterilizer rather than waiting for it to cool. So again, there's an educational piece to it.
So part of the dilemma when it comes to one tray is that we have organizations that are pulling a one tray off of the shelf at 48 hours because we were cleared with 48 hours. But if you're event related, then it's the organization's responsibility to define how they're describing and using event-related practices. And so that 48 hours does not mean that that is the shelf life. It means that it has storage and the organization has to make their decision.
And she has a very good point there, is because we have other container systems that we don't do that to. You know, if we are following an event-related sterility policy, that should apply to everything then. You know, and so are we taking tray A off the shelf or container off the shelf because they only have 180 days that they did testing on? No. Why are we focusing on just one tray here?
Yeah, I think that whole gray area of mixing and matching time-related and event-related, it's almost like we really need a lot more guidance, you know, and Barbara Ann, I'm going to ask you about what the future holds, because obviously we're not going to stay in this state where that is kind of gray and we're mixing and matching policies versus, you know, having a consistent policy that we follow across the board. But you also said something, you know, Don, at the very end there about education. And I think really, you know, just educating on best practices around event-related and time-related procedures, I think is a good thing to talk about right now before we look to the future. Although I'm always getting ahead of myself because I love to look at what's coming down the pike and, you know, get people ready for it. But let's start with, you know, just like policies, procedures, day-to-day operations. How can, you know, educators and SPD departments, you know, help get alignment on these practices that align with policies in the department?
Well, first of all, I think that just like so many other policies and procedures, when you go through an orientation, when a person first comes into your department, say they've been certified, which to me, you know, you got to show competency along with certification. It's just not a head knowledge. So that sometimes policies like event related get kind of pushed to the back and people don't go over them yearly or or bi-yearly or so on and so forth. And because of that, the education piece kind of gets lost. It gets lost because they don't know. People, if they can't speak to how event-related works within their own sterile processing department, then how are they going to be able to educate anybody outside that department, let alone a surveyor they may have walked in, who has their own idea what event-related should be? So it's really important to take something like a policy like that and review it, go over it. But it's the management's responsibility, like in our systems, where we not only orientate, the manager is part of the orientation, but also you're teaching that, and then you've got to demonstrate competency, or that the personnel or the employee has to demonstrate competency in that. And it doesn't just need to be happening one time. That needs to be happening a lot.
It was really occurring to me as we were going through this conversation from multiple different angles that it's so important to be consistent. And we see a lot of inconsistencies, right? Even in terms of what defines an event. And so as that policy becomes maybe more refined within an institution, you can modify it to have more consistency. And you really touched on something with education just then too, which is, you know, you can educate for certification and really be targeting education around, hey, this is what it takes to pass a test. Here are the right answers. But then there's this whole other component. And you mentioned those people then being able to also educate. And a big thing that comes up in our industry all the time is critical thinking and, you know, having that. You can't do those things without understanding the why behind it. And so, you know, I think it's really important that, yes, we want to get people in the department to be able to pass their certification and have that. But we also want them to understand not what is just the right answer, but the why behind why that's the right answer.
Yes, yeah. These people we are considered the experts in our field. And I've always pushed that you are the final word that's going on there. They are experts in what they do, but this is something that we need to be expert at. We need to be available to not only our IPs, not only to, you know, other clinical educators, you know, but even staff themselves in other departments that really don't understand it, especially when it comes to storage and handling and everything else. So definitely. So it's empowering your employees to understand what's going on. And you have to be able, just as you look at a sterilization ticket on a sterilizer, and I'm telling you, you'd have to demonstrate what you're marking off, how did it pass, so on. The same thing needs to apply to event-related sterility or an item that we deem that, you know. How are you touching it? How are you dragging it or not dragging it? How is it stored? There's so many aspects around it, and there's so many important things out there that sometimes this gets lost, I think. It gets lost in the midst of everything.
And one of the things that causes an enormous amount of anxiety for people in the department is when a surveyor comes in and, you know, you're talking about building the confidence of the staff to speak to other internal departments, to educate, to stand behind what's right and know that they're going to have backing because everybody understands the why for a situation, you know, but really, can they explain those practices in the way that you just mentioned it, Donna, to an inspector or a surveyor? So they might get to a point where they have the confidence to do that, you know, internally with the internal departments. But we even want to take it another level. You want to know that everybody in the department, when somebody from outside of the organization is coming in and it's a high stress time, that they're also prepared for that, correct?
Correct. And so the ways that's been done and that I've noticed, you know, when I've gone in to do some counseling for other hospitals or even other facilities within my own corporation, you know, in your huddles, you take your policies and procedures and you say, all right, next week you are going to be the one that presents this policy and procedure to go over this. So you have to learn this. As a manager, I made sure that I was part of not only their orientation, but writing off their competencies. I mean, assigning them off on competencies because I needed to know that they still knew what was going on every year, all the time, and what's going on. And it kept me in tune and me grounded in what was still going on, because you get lost as a manager in all the stuff that you're responsible for. So basically talking about it, taking a policy in your huddles, going through that, that's really important, at least once a month.
Yeah, the thing that occurred to me when you said that is sometimes even when you do a competency and you train everybody correctly, misinformation comes into the department and, you know, there's that whole game of telephone. And so there's almost a constant evaluation of, there's a process for constantly evaluating and addressing misinformation that permeates the culture of a department. And I like how you describe that, that you stay in tune with that and continue. It's almost like, you know, we look at how cells replicate, right? Right? And the body has a process for fixing errors in that replication so that everything still works properly in the body. And it's kind of the same thing in a system in the department. We have to make sure that we're constantly making sure that that consistency is there and that that misinformation, you know, is being addressed on an ongoing basis.
Well, and I'm not, please, I'm not trying to dominate the conversation oneself, but it's real important. Invite your IPs down. Invite your risk managers down. Invite your surgical directors or your coordinators down to be a part of your huddles so they understand and they're hearing what is being presented as well. You know, so you become a team. So everybody's on the same page.
Back to that confidence theme, getting confidence in those stakeholders outside of the department is also really critical for organizational alignment. So Barbara Ann, I'm going to tee you up. I know we're getting to the end here, but I did want to talk about the future because, you know, I get excited about that. And what can we look forward to just, you know, give guidance to managers and staff in these departments moving forward to help us get clarity around, you know, hey, this is an event, because we have to educate those internal stakeholders. The events don't all happen in sterile processing. And so getting some definitions around that and those examples in some sort of reference literature or industry guidelines, resources is really critical to giving us, you know, a baseline for supporting, hey, this is an event, or this is how this works.
So Justin, that has been recognized, and a subgroup out of AMI ST79 has been working tirelessly to put together a new AMI technical information reporters. We call it a TIR, and the lucky number is going to be 109. And the title of that is External Transport of Medical Devices Processed by Healthcare Facilities. Now, the interesting thing about that is it says external. Well, there's another level that we've all discussed too in this regard, and that is, well, how about if it's external to the department? How about if it goes through corridors of an institution, of a hospital, of a surgical center? There is external. So it's even now defining what does external mean. But I'm really excited about this. We've had some really great communication between different subgroups that worked on this TIR. I can't tell you, with the way the world is going, it looks like we're going back to a virtual AMI meeting in the fall. But I know we were certainly hoping to get this out sooner than later. But the emphasis of it is going to be on sterilization, disinfection, decontamination, just general use of products that are being transported from the point of sterilization to its future home of where it's going. Some of the topics, very quickly, that's involved in it already is design considerations, the loading and the unloading at the facility level, requirements for a transport vehicle, personnel considerations, how you're going to train these people that are going to be doing this transportation. We all know years ago, we used to throw sterilized items in the back of a cab and trust them to the cab driver to transport them from point A to point B. That's not going to work anymore. And how do we prepare these items, whether they be clean or sterile, for transportation? Sterility maintenance covers. My words, we're going back to thinking about dust covers. I mean, they had their heyday. We kind of went away from them. Now we're coming back to, you're going to put it on a vehicle that may be going to drive 30 miles. How else can we protect these packages if they so need it? And of course, what's going to happen on the receiving end? And last but not least, what are the regulatory considerations? And you'll never guess what group I led, the subgroup. So I did regulatory considerations. And that's talking about not only on the dirty side or the contaminated items, but also on the clean and storage. And what is it that we're going to make sure that we're able to accomplish so that the patient, again, their safety is at the utmost priority in this whole process?
Yeah, I could see the development of some KPIs or key performance indicators for departments once they have this resource. Lucky number 109, like Barbara Ann said just now, Amy TIR 109, be on the lookout for that. If you have any questions in the meantime, you can email info@onetray.com. You can find them on LinkedIn and Facebook. Just search for OneTray and join their questions group as well. And we'll have links in the write-up to all of those. Barbara Ann, great job as always. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks, Justin.
And Donna, nice job. Your first time out. We're going to have you back. You definitely did a phenomenal job. And your passion and enthusiasm for the industry shone through. And that really is something that we care a lot about Beyond Clean, because we know that's what's going to drive this industry forward. Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you, Justin.
That was Donna McLaughlin, CRCST, CSPDT, CFER, and former manager of sterile processing for the Covenant Health System. And then also Barbara Ann Harmer, the vice president of clinical services at Innovative Sterilization Technologies, LLC. And this conversation, I really enjoyed this one today because I think getting some clarity around what qualifies as an event for event-related, especially when you're trying to get everybody on the same page, is so critical. And I think one of the things that we discussed in this conversation is not really just getting everybody within the department on the same page, but getting the organization on the same page as far as what qualifies as an event, because these peel packs, these containers, they obviously go to sterile storage. Some are stored in the operating room, and the OR nurses and the surgical techs all have interaction with these containers that are stored there and the peel packs. I mean, even something like writing on tape with a pencil is an event. It's something that happened to the packaging that is not intended. And so this is a great conversation, but I also think there's so much more to come and much more to be defined in the industry so that we can all really anchor around some recommended practices and industry guidelines. So I'm excited to see the release and peruse through Amy TIR magic number 109, you know, when that comes out here coming up. But I want to thank Donna and Barbara Ann for a really engaging conversation today. And that's going to do it for this Vendor Spotlight. As a reminder, you can help support Beyond Clean by subscribing on Apple, Amazon, or Google Podcasts, as well as Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, or your favorite podcast application. You can also access bonus content for certain episodes by downloading our smartphone app for iPhone and Android. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. Thank you for listening to this Vendor Spotlight on Beyond Clean.